again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of Chicago Bullseye. What a difference one game makes. The Bulls go out after that disaster that we had in Charlotte. The Bulls go out and beat the Oklahoma City Thunder, a very rock-solid team, 104-98. The Bulls win. Butler carried us pretty much in the first half, and Rose carried us down the stretch. What a performance by Rose. I'm actually most excited, though, by the performance of Noah and Taj off the bench. You'll hear another episode that Mark's going to post, I believe, after this, that we recorded yesterday after the Charlotte game, and you could tell I was a little frustrated with their performances in the previous, you know, five games. But man, oh man, did they come out to play tonight. Taj, in 22 minutes, he was 4 of 5. He had 9 points and 4 rebounds in 22 minutes. And Noah, in 25 minutes, had 4 points. 2 of 5 shooting wasn't great, but he had 7 rebounds, 4 assists, was extremely active. I can't say enough about how great they looked, and that's huge. If those two guys embrace their role off the bench and really, you know, go out and dominate, we're going to be a rock-solid team. And a lot of talk a little bit right now. I would, before actually bringing Taj to the starting role and pairing Mirotić with Noah and Gasol with Taj. Mirotić has been struggling the last three games. He was 1 of 5 tonight in 15 minutes, and he had a really poor performance after a really bad game in Charlotte and a poor shooting night against Orlando. So three bad games in a row. I guess it's kind of hard to, 4-2, team's doing well. Do you really want to break that up? But, you know, let's face it, Gasol and Mirotić are offensive players. Gibson and Noah make their hay on the defensive end. You know, I always felt it would be better to have 1-1 there. And I think Gasol should be starting with Taj and then having Mirotić and Noah off the bench. Just my opinion. For what it's worth. But, you know, you can't say enough. With the story of the game, though, was Derrick Rose down the stretch. Down the stretch, Derrick had big basket after big basket that really pulled the Bulls away for good in the fourth quarter. Yeah, I think he had every basket down the stretch until the last one, which Gasol had a big hook, but it was assisted by Derrick. Derrick Rose tonight, fantastic performance. 37 minutes, he had 29 points, 7 assists after a slow start, 5 rebounds. Man, 5 of 6 from the free throw line. What can you say? It's good to see. I mean, if Derek even approaches that, what he did tonight, and Jimmy continues to play at this level, the sky's the limit. I mean, we can beat anybody in this league. Anybody that includes Golden State, anybody out of the West, the Bulls can beat anybody if Derek Rose approaches what he did tonight and Jimmy keeps on playing the way he is. And, you know, there's just so much talent on this team. Gasol, Mirotić, Gibson, Noah. It's just, there's very few teams that go this deep and this talented. So, really exciting night, I feel. And now the sky is, a little bit brighter after that disaster in Charlotte. Still a lot of basketball left, but 4-2 with wins over the Cavs and the Thunder. Very impressive start. So, what you're going to hear now is interviews with Tim Gallagher, NBA historian. He's going to, in remembrance of some NBA players who have passed through the summer and even more recently, and give his thoughts on the early season for the Bulls and the NBA in general. He's going to give a little bit of NBA predictions for the Western Conference and also provide you with some information about his visit to the Adidas camp where he met Derek. Well, actually saw Derek there, a couple other players. So really interesting stuff with Tim Gallagher, NBA historian. So follow me at CBEFred. Shoot me an email at ChicagoBullseye@gmail.com. Until the next episode, all the best. Be looking for an episode to come out tomorrow that Mark's going to post with just our comments after the Charlotte game. Obviously a much different tone. Very angry in that episode, but the sun will come out tomorrow and things are looking a lot better now. So all the best. Talk to you soon.
Tim Gallagher, NBA historian, back with the show. Tim, thanks a lot for jumping on. Tim, wanted to talk to you a little bit, throw some names out there. Unfortunately, some NBA players who have passed on from legends and good players have passed on. Let's touch on that first with Flip Saunders, and we'll go into some other names as we go throughout the show.
So, yeah, excited that the season's underway, and although with a heavy heart there in Minnesota with Flip Saunders passing away, who is kind of one of the cornerstones of that franchise. And yeah, there was a couple others that have passed in recent weeks that I wanted to touch on as well. But just some memories of Flip and some things that maybe the listeners aren't as familiar with about him and his career. I grew up in Ohio, and Flip Saunders is from Ohio as well, from the Cleveland area. And I reached out to one of my coaching friends and mentors, a guy named Jim Brown, that coached at Wright State, both as an assistant and head coach for many, many years. And sure enough, he had shared some memories about actually recruiting Flip Saunders as a high school player. Wright State was Division II at the time, and he saw Saunders play a couple times and realized that Saunders was going to be a better player than Wright State was going to be able to recruit, you know, at the D2 level. But he remembered him as a blonde bomber type. It wasn't a blonde headed person, but you know, a long bomb shooter, you know, kind of floppy haired, you know, a la Pistol Pete as a high school player. He just remembers him pulling up from deep and making some long shots. But Flip ended up playing at the University of Minnesota for Bill Musselman, and it was kind of in the banks of my memory. But they used to do a Globetrotter like real showmanship warm up during those years at Minnesota, and we'll put a link in it for the listeners to go to YouTube. If you just type in Minnesota 1975 warm up, you'll see it. And Flip Saunders is one of the ringleaders of this whole orchestrated pregame routine, which is just unbelievable. It's about a 19-minute clip, and I sent it to a couple of friends. And they initially said, there's no way I'm going to sit down and watch 19 minutes of this. And they said they couldn't take their eyes off it. You know, that this really happened. Why hasn't there been an ESPN 30 for 30 about this? And, but Flip was a very solid Big Ten guard at the University of Minnesota, played with future NBA players like Michael Thompson, Mark Olberding, Mark Landsberger, Kevin McHale. And then of course, most of the listeners in more modern times will remember him as a successful NBA coach, and primarily with Minnesota, but had some good teams at Detroit as well. And you know, the thing about Flip is, you know, I don't think you ever ran into anyone who didn't like Flip Saunders, and he won with not always the top talent. You know, some of those Minnesota teams, obviously they had Garnett, but you know, very early in his career, and you know, and Minnesota certainly wasn't a destination for free agents, and so. You know, they did a nice job of building around a couple key players, and Flip did a nice job. And you know, initially seeing his diagnosis, it sounded like it was treatable and curable, and you know, I thought this was going to be temporary. So when I read that he passed at age 60, it was just really, really tough to take. So one of the good guys in NBA history, and also a very good player, not NBA caliber player, but a very good player in high school and with Minnesota in the Big Ten.
Mel Daniels, if you talk a little bit about him, unfortunately he passed away recently. I'd like to hear your thoughts on Mel.
Sure, and Mel Daniels was, you can make an argument that he was the best player in the history of the ABA, because he was the starting center on three title teams for the Pacers and was a two-time MVP. So there's not many with ABA credentials that would top that. I mean, you know, I think most people would consider Dr. J as probably the marquee or all-time ABA player. But if you look kind of deeply, Mel Daniels was right there with him. And, again, played before the merger. He kind of was wrapping up his career right when the merger happened. So, but, you know, is in the Hall of Fame now. But an interesting little bit of trivia, too, about Mel Daniels was he was an assistant coach at Indiana State during the Larry Bird years at Indiana State. So if you go back and look at some of those Bird highlight reels from Indiana State and look at the bench, there's Mel Daniels as one of the assistants. And how that came about was Mel obviously was finishing up his playing career in Indiana with the Pacers, so was well established in Indiana. But his college coach at New Mexico was a gentleman named Bob King, who was the coach at Indiana State initially when Larry Bird went there. So as fate would have it, Bob King was coaching at Indiana State now. Later in his coaching career, brought in Mel as an assistant, and this relatively unknown, you know, other than some parts of Indiana, Larry Bird joins the Indiana State program, and they go on to have a couple of unbelievable seasons and, of course, played in the famous championship game against Magic Johnson and Michigan State. Mel was originally from Detroit area, Pershing High, which we've talked about Pershing a little bit with Spencer Haywood, which we'll talk about that in a past podcast. But yeah, Mel was able to reunite and was a mentor and coach for Larry Bird in college. And some health issues forced Bob King to step down as head coach. So Bill Hodges was the coach that took Indiana State to the championship game, but Bob King was there and, you know, and part of the program, but not on the bench. His health didn't enable him to coach. So he, he was around the program but not able to fulfill all the duties of a head coach. But Mel was one of the great centers and probably the all-time great center in the ABA and a fixture for the Indiana Pacers.
Hey, could you briefly, just for the listeners, I know this is off what we talked about, but explain how Larry Bird ended up at Indiana State as opposed to Indiana?
Sure. Yeah, and that's a very interesting story. And, you know, the fable, you know, kind of has it that Larry Bird was working on a garbage truck and ended up at Indiana State. But what happened, you know, kind of the short version of the story is he originally was good enough to get recruited to go to Indiana and play for Bobby Knight, which, of course, Indiana, you know, was coming off some unbelievable teams, the undefeated team in 76 and the height of Indiana basketball's greatness under Coach Knight. So Larry Bird was from a small town. Obviously, everyone knows, you know, the Hick from French Lick story. And so he was at Indiana State, but just for a short time, he was overwhelmed by the size of the school and just, you know, socially had a hard time adjusting and basically left school before the season even started. So he moved back to his hometown and was working for the city. And so, you know, when people say he was working on a garbage truck, that was one of the things he did. But, you know, just different jobs around the community and was still playing ball. And Coach Bob King became aware of Larry, and his assistant Bill Hodges became aware that Larry was not in college, he didn't fulfill his commitment to go to Indiana. So they persisted in getting him to reconsider and to go back to college and give college basketball another try. And, of course, they convinced him to go to Indiana State, and we all know the rest of the story.
Right. How about another Luther Tickey Burden?
Yeah, certainly one of the great names, right, an all-name team and so classic for a 70s, you know, playground legend that went on to some success at the highest level, at the NBA level. And just the reason I wanted to mention him was he had a couple interesting little parts of his story, kind of one of those talented but troubled guys, but ended up, you know, having redemption and got his life in order and helped out a lot of young people. So, but yeah, he was originally from Albany, New York, a playground legend, high school legend there, and ended up at the University of Utah and was a high scoring player at the University of Utah back in the early 70s. One little bit of trivia, in the FIBA World Championships, which now we send our NBA players to the World Championships. I'm not talking the Olympics now. I'm talking the World Championships that they play in the summer. So until 2010, when Kevin Durant broke it, Luther Tickey Burden had the highest points per game for a FIBA World Championship for a USA team. And, of course, back in those days, we didn't send NBA players. We sent college players. So up until just a few years ago, Luther Tickey Burden was the highest U.S. scoring average for any U.S. player until Kevin Durant broke that number. And Tickey averaged 20 points a game back in those days for that FIBA team. Then he moved on from Utah to the ABA, where he played for the Virginia Squires with Dr. J. And a little sidelight for Bulls fans is the VP of the Virginia Squires was Johnny Red Kerr. So,
wow.
In between stints as a player and a Bulls coach, and Johnny Kerr was involved in the ABA a little bit as well. And then Tickey Burden went and played for the Knicks and played a couple seasons with the Knicks and then got in some trouble, and he ended up in prison in connection with a bank robbery. So he spent a few years in prison, did his time. He said he, you know, got involved with the wrong people. He wasn't physically at the bank when it was robbed, but they found some of the money, you know, at his home. And, you know, he basically blamed it on hanging with the wrong crowd and trusting some bad guys that ended up, you know, basically pinning it on more on him than he was really involved in at all. But anyway, he ended up getting out of prison and became a mentor and a coach in North Carolina, working with a lot of young people and teaching the game and, you know, kind of, you know, don't do what I did type of thing. So, and the nickname Tickey, he said, came from when he would shoot the ball off the board. And a lot of times there were chain nets on some of the playground courts that he'd play. So he preferred a bank shot when he had the angle. So he'd bank it in and it would hit that chain net and it sounded like a tick, tick, tick. And he became known as Tickey. So
what a story.
Just one of those guys, you can't make this stuff up, right?
Exactly. Tim, you're kind of our resident expert living out in the West Coast. You're a little bit more in touch with what's going on in the Western Conference. We didn't get a chance to talk to you before the season with your predictions on the Western Conference. Now that we've had the first week of the season, you know, who do you like in the West? Who do you expect to come out of there? And, surprises and what possibly, disappointments. Rockets look like a potential disappointment early on, but, we're not that far in, so there's obviously a lot of time for them to get the ship righted.
Right, right. Boy, one score that jumped off the page at me the other night, well, and I saw some of the game, was when Golden State beat Memphis by 50. But, I just don't know how you let that happen if you're a team that has any aspirations to win a championship, that you lose to any team by 50. But anyway, we'll get to that in a minute. But, yeah, I've kind of ranked, so for the eight playoff spots, I've kind of ranked 1 through 8 in the West, and then the rest of the teams that I don't think are going to be in the mix, and a few comments on each team. So, obviously with Golden State, we've all seen what they're doing. They've set the fastest pace of any team after 4 games in NBA history. So, maybe Luke Walton's on path for Coach of the Year this year. I don't know. But, hopefully Steve Kerr's health will improve with his back, and he'll be on the bench again here shortly. But, what can you say about that? They've kept their core together. They're more confident than ever. They made it look easy last year, and they're seeming to do the same thing now. So, just love their nucleus, and they're doing it without Bogut as well. So, they can play small, they can play fast, they defend. It's hard to find much fault with them. So I've got them in the number one slot. Number two, I've got the Spurs, and I've watched them a couple times as the season's gotten underway. I know they lost to OKC to open it, but saw them on the road against the Knicks and the Celtics, and it seemed like they were just toying with those teams. They'd have, they'd keep a 6 to 8 point lead, and then if it got, it got challenged at all, they'd come down and score a couple more to keep their distance. So Aldridge seems to be fitting in well. Kawhi Leonard seems to be taking his game to another level. Unlike some other aging stars like Kobe, Tim Duncan's surrounded by, some young stars like Kawhi Leonard, and, middle-aged stars like, LaMarcus Aldridge. And then he's got his old standbys, Ginobili and Tony Parker with him. So, and obviously with Popovich, you got to have the Spurs right there. In the third spot, I've got OKC. Obviously, they've been putting up some crazy numbers with, that double overtime game against Orlando was something else, with Durant and Westbrook both getting in the 40s. And I just think their firepower is really something to be reckoned with. And obviously, there's an asterisk by any of this in terms of the team staying healthy. But I really like what OKC's doing. I think, kind of like we've talked about in other past podcasts with maybe Mark Jackson at Golden State, Tibbs with the Bulls, I think things just kind of ran their course with Scott Brooks. And so, kind of a fresh perspective on Billy Donovan, I think is going to do a lot to help them. And I like what they've done to kind of tweak their roster a little bit. And I'm excited about what I see from OKC. In the fifth spot, I've got the Clippers. Excuse me, in the fourth spot, I've got the Clippers. I don't think they're a championship team. We've talked about it before. I just don't see DeAndre Jordan as a starting center on a championship team. Blake Griffin and Chris Paul are obviously great upper echelon of, top 10 players in the league, maybe even a shorter list than that. I like the fact that they picked up Paul Pierce for late game stability and shot making. But, DeAndre Jordan, I love J.J. Redick. But, is J.J. Redick a starter on a championship team, right? When I ask myself that question, I just don't see it, right? I love the player he's become. I love the way he shoots the ball. I love the way he competes. But, that's the question I kind of ask myself. Are there people in their starting lineup that you envision as starters on a championship team? And the Clippers just don't have that. In the fifth spot, I've got the Rockets. I like what they've done in terms of Ty Lawson. That was a little bit of a risk because of his off the court issues, but he's got an incredible motor, and you mix that with Harden and But again, I'm not a huge Dwight Howard fan either, kind of for some of the same reasons, you know, that I think of DeAndre Jordan. I just don't know if you can trust him late in the game. And in the Rockets, you know, I think are very streaky, and you know, and on a given night, you know, can create a lot of trouble for anyone. And especially having a guy like James Harden at the end of a game that can take things over, right? He can dominate almost anyone in the league. So, you know, they're a dangerous team, but, you know, I don't see them any higher than fifth. In the sixth spot, I've got Memphis. You know, kind of like last year when we talked about Memphis and Golden State, that I know that Memphis is a very solid defensive team, but I just have a lot of concerns about offensive firepower. And I think you need that, especially playing against a lot of the teams we mentioned that have, you know, in most cases, at least two guys that can really go off offensively. And in Memphis, I don't see that, right? I mean, Gasol obviously was a first team All-NBA guy and can score, but I just don't see the scoring punch to get deep into the playoffs any deeper than they were able to get last year. So that leaves me to 7 and 8, the last two playoff spots. And I've been scratching my head on this one. I see six teams that I think have a shot at those spots. And I'll tell you the teams that I think don't have a chance. And that's the Kings, the Lakers, and drumroll, the Pelicans. And why don't we address the teams that are not going to get in, and then we'll talk about who I think can battle it out for those last two slots.
Wow.
So the Kings... You know, I just think that's a recipe for disaster with Rondo, Cousins, George Karl, and an impulsive owner. And I just – it's just too much of a dysfunctional mix for them to be a playoff team, especially in the West. Even though I think, on a, you know, they may have flashes, but, you know – and even a star player like Rudy Gay, right, has never gone deep in the playoffs, right? You know, I think of – when I think of Rudy Gay, I think of someone like a Corey Maggette who's I think of like a tease, right? Like an incredible talent, physical specimen, does some amazing things, but you know, the teams never win or never go deep in the playoffs. And so I just don't think the Kings have the recipe. Boy, the Lakers, we could spend a whole podcast on that. Being out here on the West Coast, I see a lot of the Laker games, and you know, they're 0-4. Kobe just looks out of gas to me. It looks like he just doesn't have the legs. And the young talent that's around them is just far from ready, right? D'Angelo Russell, Julius Randle, I think someday can get there. But unlike some other aging veterans, like a Kevin Garnett or I mentioned Tim Duncan, that you know they have more of a supporting cast of veteran players. And with the Lakers, it's really some role players. I mean, I know Roy Hibbert was an all-star, you know, at one point in his career. Lou Williams was sixth man of the year. But I think these are just all pieces, right? They're not starting type players on playoff teams. And, you know, I mean, in some ways, I just kind of feel bad for Kobe because he's trying to take it on himself, but, you know, it's just not there. And so it's going to be a long year for the Lakers. As far as the Pelicans, I think everyone was very quick to kind of christen Anthony Davis as the next MVP. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love his talent, his potential, and I think he's going to get there. But with him also, I think of the supporting cast, right? So who's the next best player on the Pelicans? You know, Jrue Holiday, Tyreke Evans, who's hurt, Eric Gordon, who's hurt a lot, Ryan Anderson. I don't know. I just don't see it in terms of you know, in terms of talent and leadership and really someone to mentor Anthony Davis. I think Monty Williams, their coach last year, was in that capacity. But there's no veteran player like a Kevin Garnett who's kind of helping bring along Karl Anthony Towns and Wiggins, right? And I just don't see that type of presence on the Pelicans bench. And with the injuries, coaching change, and so much on Anthony Davis's young shoulders, I just don't see it happening for them. So,
interesting.
So that leaves us with six teams that I think are going to battle it out for two spots. And I'll do a quick little snapshot of each of them. And I still haven't sorted through the order. I guess if I had to pick two, I would say Utah and Minnesota would be those last two spots.
Whoa.
And Utah, because I think they do have some young talent. And I think they're kind of doing things the Spurs way. You know, Quinn Snyder kind of cut his teeth a little bit in the Spurs organization and coached in their D-League team. You know, Jerry Sloan is still upstairs in the front office as an advisor, so kind of in that Jerry West kind of role, like Jerry West is at Golden State. So I think they're keeping a close watch on the development of these young guys. And, you know, and I think they play really good defense with Gobert. You know, Derek Favors is an emerging talent, Gordon Hayward. I've seen Alec Burks do some impressive things at the two guard. They've got Trey Burke. So I think they've got some interesting pieces. And if they stay healthy, I think, you know, there's a chance they may get one of those slots. With Minnesota, you know, that mix of Kevin Garnett, Tayshaun Prince, Andre Miller, so, you know, veterans that have been there, done that, know how to be pros, and mixing that in with guys kind of in the mid-range of their career, like a Ricky Rubio and then Andrew Wiggins and Karl-Anthony Towns just getting started. And then I think with Flip Saunders passing away, I think that may be a catalyst to kind of inspire them in terms of playing together. And Sam Mitchell, their coach, is, you know, a proven NBA coach. You know, he's had teams in the playoffs before. And, you know, I think he knows what he's doing. So, you know, it's tough to fill those other two slots in the West. You know, Dallas, hard to say about Dallas. Obviously, Rick Carlisle knows what he's doing as a coach. You've got Dirk at the end of his career. But, you know, Darren Williams, if Chandler Parsons stays healthy, there's some, you know, Wes Matthews is there. If he comes back from his injury and it appears like he has, you know, they're going to compete every night, right? They're not going to roll over unless Mark Cuban decides he's got some statement to make about the lottery or tanking or something. Portland's an interesting team. You know, again, I think they're going to compete. They've got Lillard and C.J. McCollum is an interesting young talent. Phoenix, you know, I like what Jeff Hornacek does and his approach. I think he's a smart young coach. And again, you know, kind of a protege of Jerry Sloan. They've got Tyson Chandler as a rim protector. They've got the Slash Brothers with Eric Bledsoe and Brandon Knight. You know, Dragic's not there anymore. But again, some interesting pieces and young talent. And, you know, again, I think they're going to compete. And then finally, Denver, who I watched very closely last night, you know, beat the Lakers pretty handily in Los Angeles. And Mike Malone, I think, is a very underrated coach. You know, he was an assistant at Golden State when Mark Jackson, you know, took that team to another level. You know, when they obviously got, you know, brought Curry in and Klay Thompson, and but Mike Malone was a big piece of that, especially on the defensive end. He went to Sacramento and seemed to be on the right path there, and then somehow had a falling out with the impulsive owner that I had mentioned earlier. So I think Mike Malone really knows what he's doing as a coach, and I like the way he manages the game. Moutier looks like an interesting talent. They've got some energy guys like Kenneth Faried and J.J. Hickson. Gallinari looks healthy again and a pretty dynamic player. And, again, beating the Lakers isn't something to, you know, wave a pennant about, but the way they went about their business and the energy they played with and the way Malone managed the game, I was very impressed with Denver. And they're going to be a tough out, you know, night to night. So that's my West preview.
Thanks, Tim. That was a great overview of the West, and I agree with a lot of what you said. I got to believe the Pelicans still, I feel, maybe can turn it around, and just my opinion, you know, possibly get that eighth spot. I think they, you know, Anthony Davis is something, though. I mean, there's no doubt that guy is a top five NBA player, and when you have that one superstar, you can do a lot. We'll see. What about the Bulls? Have you been able to watch them at all first week? I'd love to get your thoughts on the Bulls, and also, most importantly, your thoughts on this front court mess right now. You know, I said Taj and Noah have looked absolutely awful. What do you think about the pairings, and how would you recommend spreading out the minutes?
Sure. Well, and I have watched just about all of the Bulls games so far. First of all, again, I'm out here on the West Coast, but I'm a Bulls fan and follow the Bulls closely, obviously, with my, you know, hacks and ties. But one thing that I think just for Bulls fans to keep in perspective is I think there's a lot of teams that would envy having the roster the Bulls have, you know, in terms of the full complement of players. You know, there's probably only a handful of teams and maybe only one in the East, and that's even debatable. If LeBron wasn't on that roster, that you'd rather have than the roster the Bulls have put together. Now that said, I think they've there are some concerns that I've had. First I'll talk about what I've liked so far, and obviously Jimmy Butler I think is doing what he's been paid to do, and I mean that literally now. And I saw, I didn't read the full heading, but I saw he called out the team about their defensive effort last night, which I'm glad to see that he's, taking note of that and trying to do something about it. The other thing is I've really liked the development of McDermott in terms of his bursts of offense. And I think that's what we all envisioned him doing. And so it's nice to see that that's coming to fruition, that he's a shot maker and it's not just a catch and shoot on threes. He's mixing it up a little bit. And I think the defensive effort is there from him as well, and kind of like a J.J. Redick who made himself into a competent defensive player through effort and smarts. I think Doug is going to do the same thing. Is he going to be a stopper? Is he going to shut a guy down like Snell might? No, I don't think so. But I think he's going to get to the point where you can have him on the floor late in the game and not be a huge defensive liability. I've liked the improvement of Etuan Moore as a backup guard. I think he's very serviceable as a, third or fourth guard off the bench, probably a fourth guard and ideally. And then, and Aaron Brooks, I like his burstiness and just having a guy like him available to call on, right? It's kind of like a relief pitcher in baseball, right? You want to have a couple different looks in your bullpen depending on circumstances. So I think having a weapon like Brooks where he can go off and have a 10 or 12 point quarter, I like what I've seen from him as well. Defensively, I'm a little concerned with what I saw from Brooks, especially last night, but I think those are things, hopefully they're looking at the film and can make some adjustments there. My concerns in watching the Bulls are, you mentioned the front line, and with Taj Gibson, I don't know, he just, especially, it really dawned on me last night watching Denver and seeing the energy that Kenneth Faried and J.J. Hickson play with, right? And I see them as even less rim protector type players than Taj, right? And I don't know, just Taj just looks a little too casual for me out there at times, which, his length and shot blocking ability, we know he can do it. And I just, it's almost like he needs to get a fire lit under him and just to play with more energy. I'm really concerned with Noah's overall effectiveness. You mentioned that earlier in our conversation, and I know he's never going to be an offensive juggernaut, but just his impact on the game seems to be getting less and less, and I'm concerned about him in there and what he's going to be able to contribute, and I don't know if he's just out of gas. I mean, he's played so hard for so long that it's just the mileage and injuries or teams have kind of figured his tendencies out. I don't know, but I'm concerned about his overall contribution. And then, and overall, I'm okay with what I've seen from Mirotić. I think some of his late game decision making, in terms of just handling the ball, passes, shot selection. I've got a few concerns about that, but overall, I'm okay with and he's still a young player, so I'm overall okay with that. Certainly, how do you divvy up the minutes late in the game? And, Gasol obviously is a shot blocker, rim protector, established pro, probably a future Hall of Famer. So, you obviously want to have him there. I don't know. I'm a little concerned about I was thinking offense, defensive, switch outs, but, sometimes you kind of lose the flow and continuity with that. And the substitutions, availability to do that. So for instance, having Nico there from an offensive standpoint and then getting Taj in there from a defensive standpoint when you can do those offense defensive switches. Same thing with Doug on offense and maybe Snell on defense at those positions. So, and then just, you know, at the end of games, obviously you have to have Rose, Jimmy, and Powell out there. So what are the other two spots you have, depending on circumstances? And, you know, I think those are the pieces that have to get figured out. You know, I think, you know, the way the NBA has gone, where you have these, you know, multi-position players, Snell makes some sense from a defensive standpoint because he can pretty much guard, you know, 1 through 4 for the most part. So, you know, I think having him out there at end of games makes some sense. You know, Snell's offensive ability, though, late in the games concerns me, you know, as a shot maker. You know, he's streaky, right? He can do it at times. But, you know, if I'm guarding him, I'm playing the Bulls, I'm staying off him, right? I'll let him beat me, you know. And, you know, extra attention to Jimmy. And with Rose, you know, I know he kind of settled for that long-range jumper to close out that Detroit game, you know, which could have been a game winner. I would have liked to have seen him attack the basket and make something happen. I mean, that's really his game as a slasher. So I don't know if it's health, confidence. You know, he's still working his way back, obviously. But I think if we put the ball in D. Rose's hands and there's more finishes like that Detroit game, I think you let Jimmy have a crack at it.
I concur 100%. You know, I think that's a great way of putting it. Jimmy deserves a shot now in some of these late game opportunities. I still think Derek should get the majority of them, but you like to see Jimmy get a shot every once in a while. Tim, you've been fantastic with your time, already given us 40 minutes. I can't tell you enough how much we appreciate you joining the show, and I'm looking forward to having you on soon again to, you know, get a status of the team and hopefully talk about some of these old players that I love hearing you talk about, and just your knowledge is incredible. So thank you so much, Tim.
Okay, Fred. Always a pleasure. We'll talk to you soon.